This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode. Today I'm speaking with Tom Dowman from Paygo Baby. Full disclosure, Tom is actually a client of mine. I helped Tom launch his products on Amazon earlier this year, and we're going to be talking about that a bit on the episode, so I thought good to reference it here because you will hear us talking about working together. Tom sells a range of playmats for babies. This is his first product, and he talks a lot about how his motivation for launching his product, how he works around his young family. He actually has a full-time day job as well. And this is just a really interesting chat about, you know, being a startup product business that I hope you really enjoy. So now I'd love to introduce you to Tom. So hi, Tom. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Vicky.
So can we please start with you giving us an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell, please?
My name's Tom Dowman. I am the founder of Paygo Baby, which is a kids slash home product company. At the moment we have one product, which is a stylish waterproof machine washable mat to help you keep your floor tidy when you have kids that love to throw food on the floor.
Thank you. And obviously I've seen your mats and I think they're wonderful. I think I'll definitely put a link in the show notes so people can go and take a look, because I think it's a very hard product to describe and people need to definitely go and have a look at it to see exactly what it looks like. And I'd also say that it's a really big splash mat, isn't it? It's like not one of these little circles. It's like quite a big thing.
Well, it became pretty obvious earlier on when we were prototyping that a small mat isn't compatible with my children, and therefore it's probably not compatible with a lot of children, because, you know, age 9 months, they get a bit of a bend in the elbow and they can start to projectile throw things across the kitchen or across the dining room. And if you had anything smaller than our mat, then I think you'd be doing a lot more tidying up than you should be.
Thank you. And I think that leads on quite nicely to what I want to talk about next, is what prompted you to create your mats in the first place? So was it inspired by your kids, or was it something else? I know your kids have been a big part of sort of the creation process, but what kicked it all off?
Well, if you trace it all the way back, I think it probably comes back to Malcolm Gladwell. It wouldn't be appropriate to be on a podcast without mentioning Malcolm Gladwell. And his 10,000 hours, because I was on my shared parental leave. So my wife for my first Agatha, which is now, she was born in 2017. My wife did the first 6 months and then we swapped, and I did, well, it was originally supposed to be 6 months, but it ended up being sort of 9, 10, 11 months, something like that, before she went to nursery. And I was doing a bit of reading and I came across this Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours concept. And there was a chap in America who decided that he was going to play golf for 10,000 hours and break into the PGA Tour. Subsequently, he wasn't able to do that. But I also found a chap in Britain who'd written a blog about he decided to stop working and play table tennis for 10,000 hours. He was okay, he was a pretty good table tennis player before, nothing major. very enthusiastic, 10,000 hours, and then he was going to break into the UK top 100. That was his goal. And his name was Sam Priestley. And he didn't do it because he wasn't talented enough, or maybe he didn't practice in quite the right way. There's a very interesting blog about how sort of dedicated practice and effort could lead to results. And he did, you know, he did pretty well. He's obviously very good at table tennis by the end of the year that he spent doing this. And he wrote a blog about it. And I sort of started following his blog, and he's a serial entrepreneur. He was actually based in Tunbridge Wells. And from the back of the table tennis year that he spent doing this, he decided to launch his own table tennis product company. And so he used sort of an intuition and also some market research. I think he used Jungle Scout to work out that he thought there was a gap in the market for a company that sort of their product launch was a table tennis bat, but they now sell other things. And his sort of idea was to sell it mainly on Amazon. So he found his niche, and he, as you might do, worked out how to prototype the packaging and all this stuff. But he wrote a very detailed blog about how he did it. And, you know, as I read the blog, I found it very interesting because it's not something I knew anything about. So by the end of reading this blog, several posts, tens of posts, I suppose, about how one might go about developing a product to sell on Amazon or other online methods. I thought, well, you know what? I could probably do this. And at the same time, I was looking after a baby that was weaning. You know, we were age 6 months, we started to wean her, and she was eating the food, and we did it very much. We don't really make a mess in the way that some people do. You know, that's a big factor for some people. Also, I think it was a bit of a pushback against my mum, who was very much, you have to spoon all the food into their mouth without getting anything anywhere. And so obviously, where anything she says, I have to go completely against it as a good son. And my daughter Agatha, was making a lot of mess, and we bought some like a bit of tablecloth from a local shop to put underneath her high chair. And it wasn't very satisfactory, and it got wrecked straight away. And so these two sort of spheres sort of started to combine. And I realized that we sort of had a hunch that I could probably find a product to sell on Amazon. And this is, I'm making some assumptions here, but my assumption would be that people who are searching to sell products on Amazon, some of them might not be that into babies, but at the time, babies was very much my entire life. You know, it was full time looking after a baby, and so my search for a product to sell sort of headed in that direction. And I used Jungle Scout, and you know, read a lot of guidance online about what it might do, and I came up with the idea of this baby mat, and it fitted into certain categories, and it was probably about the right price point. It was relatively easy to source. There's not many movable parts. And it was obviously something that I knew about and would be able to potentially have an insight into the marketing. And then I think the final point was, at the time, and obviously this is our pre-baby life, a little bit, we had quite a smart flat, and it was looking pretty, it was pretty nice, and it was all together. Those were the days. And the idea of when we sort of brought a bit of tablecloth to put under the mat, it was, you know, it had maybe like, it was like elephants, or it was like a baby sort of bit of sort of lino, baby focused. We thought, oh, wouldn't that be nice, because we've got a baby, when actually we thought to ourselves, actually, we'd like something that looks a bit nice in our flat that doesn't sort of clash up against all our sort of minimalism and tidy sort of stuff. And so my, again, sort of instinct was, well, look, if we did a mat, but with a you know, perhaps a slightly more stylish pattern on. Perhaps we could market it as something that, you know, it helps you keep your house tidy. It's to do with your baby, but it's not babyish. It's not sort of cutesy and all those sort of things. And maybe sort of have it appeal to people who are a bit more into sort of the design sort of aspect and want to have their house looking quite smart.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because your mats are practical, but they are also stylish. And you're right, I remember going through a similar thing with my kids. And I actually remember buying like one of those wipe clean tablecloths to put on the floor under the high chair. But the problem with that was it was slippy, and we had wooden floors, so it would slide and it just didn't
exactly
work.
The same.
Because yeah, I didn't want a plastic sheet covered in primary colours at that time.
Yeah, and it got you couldn't wash it. Like, so our mat is machine washable, but you couldn't have the bit of cloth into the washing machine because it would wreck it. And also, it was sort of transparent. I seem to remember it was sort of like had see-through bits on it, and it started to cloud very quickly because it's not really designed to be, you know, wiped with sort of, you know, one of those sort of spray done wipe clean stuff. You know, you're supposed to just use soap and water, and it basically got wrecked really quickly. And so, yeah, the that sort of attractive looking design was one of the sort of main sort of points of difference, I suppose, that we were trying to get. And when I looked on Amazon and looked at the competition, it was a pretty mixed bag. I think there was a lot of people who weren't coming at it from that angle, if we say that.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about your mat, and I think kind of sort of shows the sort of amount of research you put into it, I guess being in a situation where you had a young family and you were your own ideal customers.
Yeah.
Your mat, I think, when I, you know, because obviously we've worked together and I've looked on Amazon, I think your product ticks all of the boxes, whereas some other products don't. So you know what, you know, because it's big and it's stylish and it can go in the washing machine. And I'm not saying this just to sing the praises of your product, even though I think it's really good. What I mean is that clearly you put a lot of research in, because it ticks every single one of those boxes that someone might be looking for. Because it would be a shame if it was, you know, really big and stylish, but you couldn't throw it in the washing machine, for example. So it sounds like you had a really clear spec in mind.
Well, yeah, I think that's right. I mean, when we were coming up with the sort of design, so the, you know, the two elements really that we had choice over were the size. We talked about that. Went for a bigger mat to sort of catch more of the food, and then the actual pattern design. I think when we were coming up with it, I was probably a little less bold than I would be now. And so I decided to take design language from existing baby products. So over the last 10 years, probably more than that, 20 years, like, you know, light gray and white has very, very much been a sort of a common motif on baby products. You get all different patterns and things like that. And so, I and we is interchangeable, as my wife and I. We sort of thought, well, let's do that, because it's a, yeah, I said, it's an understood language. It's popularized by some of the big players. And then I thought, well, in that case, let's switch up the pattern. And I remember at the time it was a back cover of a fashion magazine, I think, and it was an advert for Todd's shoes, and it had somebody, Jenna, in it. I don't know all their names. One of the Kardashians, and in behind her, there was a rug with a certain pattern on it. It was interlocking hexagons, so it wasn't majorly complicated. But I thought, well, there we go. That's on a fashion magazine, and that looks pretty cool to me, so let's go for that. And I sent it to a pattern designer in in Middlesbrough that I'd found on People Per Hour and said, could you knock me up something a little bit like this? Albeit not so similar that it, you know, might infringe on any copyrights. And that was very quick, and she did that, vectorized it and everything. And that's where we came up with the initial pattern.
Amazing, thank you. So you had this really clear spec, you had your patterns, you knew exactly what it sounds like at this stage, you knew exactly what you were looking for. So yeah. What came next? How did you go about finding someone that could create this to your brief?
So I think probably the first stage was looking at the comments on the products that would be our competitors on Amazon. So just doing a bit of analysis, and I've got the spreadsheet somewhere, about what people are saying, what's good, what's bad, what they'd like to see, and you know, this is great, but wouldn't it be great if it was like this? And obviously some of those things that people say, you can't deliver to them, like, you know, wouldn't it be great if it was, you know, made out of a different material, or if it was lighter, or, you know, some of those things. But if they say, wouldn't it be great if it was bigger, then, you know, that's something you can take on board. Or it doesn't look very nice in my house. Again, that's something you can take on board. So there was a list of, I suppose it's almost innovation through comments, through user experience of things that we like, we, you know, these number of people are saying this and that.
I love that you did that. By the way, Tom, I just wanted to interject and say, I love that you did that, because I recommend this to people all the time, but I've never came across anyone yet who's told me they have actually done it.
Yeah.
But I think it's such a great way of just getting some real life, real research without having to go out and do focus groups and things like that. So yeah, well, that's all I wanted to say. I think it's fantastic.
She works in innovation as a job, so she's quite used to getting, I suppose what she does is gets user feedback and then converts those into new ideas. In this instance, we weren't really coming up with anything groundbreakingly new or innovative, you know, highly innovative, but it was useful to have those. And actually that reinforced, clearly remember that reinforcing our view that it should be a larger mat. And once we had those, I think machine washable was another one. So that was sort of on our list. And actually that's a really important characteristic. And then I went on Alibaba and I think I found four manufacturers, I suppose, who were making a similar sort of products. And I ordered them. I ordered two from each one. I'm exactly sure why I ordered two, but there we go. And it was a real variety. Some of them were pretty bad, and a couple of them were good. But the one we went for, I had a bit of a dialogue with them about what processes they use, and they talked about dual lamination and the way they make the sort of edging and the way the product comes in a sort of carry bag. And actually that became the only real option for us, because the others were a bit substandard and we just weren't willing to go down that road. And so they sent over those two, and then I said, okay, well, here's my pattern. Can you prototype it for me? And they did, and we received that. And obviously the prototype isn't exactly as it will be, because of the way they manufacture the materials, but it was pretty good, and that was that. And so we had found a supplier.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think I really like what you said as well about ordering samples, because that's another thing that I think people should always do, because as you say, it's amazing. You can be ordering effectively the same thing. When you look online, it looks very comparable, but actually when you hold it in your hands, the difference in quality can be vast, can't it?
Yeah, it was not good. And even we tried them out with the high chair, and even within a couple of days you could see things were going a bit wrong. And yeah, it was pretty obvious what we needed to go with.
Yeah, and it's great that you actually used them as well, because I think that's also really good to actually use the things what they're meant for, rather than just taking them out and looking at them.
Yeah,
actually putting them to use, because actually you can't always see from just glancing at something that it isn't going to work. So I think that's great advice too.
Yeah, we do use them every day, twice a day, three times a day sometimes, lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it almost feels strange. It would be weird now if we didn't have something underneath there, because it's so much part of our like routine. And now the kids, I posted something on Instagram the other day about my eldest, because she's three now. She will be like, we need to get the mat out. It's time for dinner. Let's get the mat out. And if it's not... if it's got any sort of ruffles in it or something, my two-year-old will like try and pull them out and be like, Matt. So I think he's developing a bit of OCD regarding it, which is probably unhealthy. But yeah, it's a big part of our sort of routine for dining.
Yeah. So once you found actually someone who could manufacture the product, let's talk about a little bit about the steps you then went through to get your product on Amazon, because that was obviously the goal. Very aware that I know a lot of this already, but let's just pretend I don't.
Sure. Let's just think about what the order that happened. So we developed a brand. So we realized we needed a brand. So we've got a sort of friend of a friend who does some branding, and had her over for dinner and said, right, we need to come up with a brand. We thought about sort of Latin names and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, what is this? I remember doing they called it a brand house, where you have to like, it's a methodology for coming up with a brand and talking about what the ethos of the brand is, what your sort of principles are, what it stands for, and then slowly deducing how the brand sort of goes about its business, I suppose. Now, that was probably overkill, but we sort of came up with the idea that the old saying that it takes a village to raise a child, and pago is the Latin word for village. So we thought, okay, Pago, that sounds good. And there's a huge like drinks manufacturer called Pago. So we were like, right, we can't have that. What about Pago Baby? Done. And the URL was available, and we all liked it. And so we came up with that. And then we came up with a logo. Again, got some help with that. We had some prototypes, and we didn't like any of them. So we, I think in the end, my wife just sort of drew a triangle and a circle and said, this is it. And I said, well, it looks like it's a PlayStation game. And she said, no, it doesn't. And then we used the Pantone Colors of the Year 2018, I suppose it was. And that was it. So we worked out our branding. So we sent those all off to the factory. And then I think probably I placed the order. I think I placed the order for 1,000 mats, which was quite bold at the time. But I just thought to myself, do you know what? You're going to either do it or not. And let's just crack on. And if I've got 1,000, it's going to sort of focus my mind a bit on it. And it did. And at that point, once the order had been placed, I realized they needed to get shipping organized and Amazon product page and all of that sort of stuff. So actually that was when I got in contact with you, Vicky, I think. And you were incredibly helpful setting up the Amazon account and getting the product page written. You also helped out understanding what photographs we needed to get on there, and I got my next door neighbor of the time to do the photography, which was our initial product launch photography. You have to measure completely silence, but we did a photo shoot with my daughter where we just asked, we just sat her in an eye chair and said, right, spill things. And she thought it was the best day of her life. And so there's lots of photos up there on that, in that photo shoot. And then it was a question of how many mats do we send directly to Amazon? Because it's expensive to store them with Amazon. So Vicky recommended me sort of a warehouse service in Essex. And so they took the majority of the, they took all the whole shipping, the whole 1,000. And then since then we've been dripping in 200 at a time to Amazon warehouse for them to do the, so that they can do the Prime FBA service from their own warehouses. The shipping was a bit of an event in the end, because at the end of last year, there was a big problem caused by, I think it's like COVID, Brexit, that big tanker stuck in the Suez Canal. Everything sort of conspired, and the shipping was delayed quite heavily by, I think it was about 6 weeks in the end, which came from China. But to be honest, it was remarkably straightforward. You know, I emailed the Chinese manufacturer, and the shipping people, who are a British company, were very experienced with dealing with all that. And they picked it up from the factory and took it to the ship, and it came in, and then it went to the warehouse a couple of months later. So
yeah.
So that's up to getting it live on Amazon, I think.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. And I think it's quite good you touched on the shipping. I think one thing, I guess, just to highlight to people is that the shipping can be sort of scary and seem quite daunting. But actually, if you work with somebody who knows what they're doing, I hope you'll agree, Tom, that actually, if you know it's in safe hands, it is something you can kind of, once it's in place, you can forget it. And yes, there might be delays. In fact, I don't think I've ever ordered a shipment from China where there hasn't been some kind of delay. But I think it's good to know that safe hands, and also to elaborate on what you were saying about the stock, because I think this might be useful for people to know the reason I suggested that Tom didn't send 1,000 units into Amazon and to send them to a separate warehouse is that Amazon storage fees can get quite high, and they go up as time goes on. So once you hit the 6 months mark, you know, you've had stock there for 6 months, if you get there, and hopefully, you know, hopefully you won't, but you know, if you do, then you start incurring long-term storage fees on top of your regular storage fees, and then it adds up. And also, if you decide, actually, I've got too many in Amazon, I want to take them out again, they then charge you for the privilege of sending your stuff back to you as well. So just for context, people listening, that's where I suggested to Tom not to send all the stock into Amazon, because at least if it's somewhere else, you can sell on your own website, you can sell on eBay, you can sell, you know, anywhere you like, and they just, it's just a little bit easier just to get, you know, get your hands on your own products, whereas once they're in Amazon, getting them out again isn't quick and isn't straightforward. So I hope you don't mind, Tom, if it was good
That. I mean, the shippers were, it's a British company based in the north of England, and the guy who organized it was very experienced. He also had a very calming Yorkshire sort of accent, and whenever I spoke to him a few times around the end of last year, and whenever I spoke to him, I was like, oh yes, I'm quite reassured. He's on top of it, and he knows what he's doing, and he's very apologetic when, you know, even if it's going to be a week delay, he was like, I'm incredibly sorry, this is, you know. But because he has such a lovely voice, I was like, oh, do you know what? I'm reassured, and I wasn't panicking, despite the fact, it was not quite to the schedule we had hoped.
And that's good. And I agree. Very nice man, very calm. I guess you have to be if you're going to work and stuff. Doing something so stressful, you probably need to be super calm.
Definitely. Yeah, that's right. And he probably started off his career with like quite a panicked voice, and then he learned how to sort of, he had to calm his clients down by slowing his voice and slowing it down a little bit.
He's probably seen it all by now as well. Probably nothing phases him either. Whereas for us as sellers, when something happens for the first time, it seems like a really big deal.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're dealing with that day to day, it gives you a bit more perspective.
Definitely.
So we got your products onto Amazon in, it was early 2021, I think, wasn't it, Tom, in the end?
Actually, April. It was April this year we actually started. So the, yes, because I, when I looked through the months, April is the month that it, we didn't, hadn't quite started properly. So it's a very low sales month. The selling didn't properly start, I think, until the beginning of May. So we had it online, but it wasn't, it wasn't being promoted. We hadn't started the advertising, anything like that.
So that's actually leads us on quite nicely then. So let's talk a little bit about how we got those first sales and the things you did to promote the listing when it was brand new.
So when it was brand new, I think we had one or two sales without any advertising or anything like that. It's really surprised, like someone has sort of just found it, must be right at the bottom of all the lists, but they found it. I think at the time it was also on the price, which was sort of the price that we had put in as sort of the maximum price it could be, at which point you then apply a discount to it, is how the Amazon system works. So our sort of initial price was $19.99, but actually we've only sold a few units at that price. It enables you to vary the price from that point. We did Vine, which is a Amazon run service, which allows, I don't know if they are sort of vetted or they're just sort of, they sort of sign up to Vine. It allows them to buy the products at a very reduced cost or sometimes no cost. And then they are somehow incentivized to review them. And I think if they review them, it helps them stay on Vine. Sorry, Becky, you probably know this a little bit better than me.
Yeah, so it's basic condition of being on Vine is that if you have one of these heavily discounted or free Vine products, you are obliged to leave a review for it. You don't have to leave a positive review. I should make that really clear, but you do have to leave a review. And I believe you can be invited to join the Amazon Vine scheme, although what the criteria is, I don't know. But it's kind of a way that if they're a Vine, let's call them reviewers, signed up who like the look of your product, then it's a nice way to get some early reviews. It's definitely something worth doing, in my opinion.
So I think we've got probably 20 to 25 reviews via Vine, which is excellent, really good start. And that was for, I think, for the first 2 weeks. So obviously, it was really brilliant. Obviously, but it's not, you know, it's not for free. You pay with a reduced sale price. But definitely worth it to get things going. And then we did sort of a campaign of advertising through Amazon. So I think there's two streams. One was advertising at the top of the product page. Vicky, you're going to have to help me out here.
Yeah, so we did two separate campaigns. So one, we were doing keyword targeting, where if someone typed in splash mat or splat mat or something relevant, your ad would show at the top of the search results. And then we also did some what's called ASIN targeting, which basically means you're targeting other products. So if someone was looking at a product similar to yours and we identified some that we thought would be good ones to look at, then near the bottom, it says something like related products. I forget the wording because it does change. Yeah. And then your product would show up down there as well. We actually stopped doing that because the return wasn't as good. And actually, you can often still appear through there via the keyword targeting if you're targeting the same keywords as the product you were targeting, which is, I'm not sure I explained that quite well. Generally, I suggest to people try both, because for some people, the targeting other products works exceptionally well. Perhaps if your product is sort of in some way superior to theirs, it has a feature that theirs doesn't, it can actually work quite well. but it doesn't work for everyone, which is why at the beginning I always think of the advertising. It's a case of testing and seeing what converts. But I'll let you take things on from here, Tom.
No, and then I may need some help. And then you did some analysis, Vicky, which, as you said, showed that the keyword advertising was more profitable per click and ultimately purchase than the other, than the ASIN targeting. So that was the sort of the launch promotions, I suppose. And we're still doing the advertising as of now, just the keywords. And then not long after we launched, so in June this year was Prime Days. I think it's 2 days. And Amazon encourages the sellers to reduce or put in a Prime reduction in their price to try and get more sales, but also to try and encourage people to use Prime and to go to the website, etc. And so we put in a 20% discount, I think it was, to the sale price, which was successful in a sense. We sold, you know, a huge number of units on those 2 days. I think it was 30, 35, 40 or something like that, which was great and really helped you get things moving along. And then after those days, we put the price back to, I don't know, it was £17.50. And so we've been, since sort of the early middle part of June until now, we've been going at £17.50. And then last week, I was looking through the sort of proto accounts, I suppose, for the company, because I'm just moving now into having an accountant or bookkeeper on board to just make sure everything's being processed correctly. And I had a review, and one of the things from the review is that I'm sort of quite keen to move the stock on and get into the sort of the next phase. So the beginning of last week, we put the price down to £15.50, just to see what impact that would have on the sales. And it's a small but not insignificant impact. I think it's probably, in my calculations, probably increased sales by about 20%.
That's great. And I think it's good that you're doing all of this testing, because just subtle changes to the pricing can make a real difference.
Yeah, no, it's given me a bit of sort of thought about where, you know, the profitability of it, where it's going, and where, you know, if you sort of say, okay, this is where we are, is it going to be like this? Are we just going to keep going on this level for the rest of time? What differences do we need to make in order to move from, I think at this point, I'd say we've gone from 0 to 1, but now we need to move up from 1 to 2 to 3. And sometimes a good time to have a bit of a reflection about where you're going. And I think it's got to the stage, I think, where we need to build on what we've got and sort of move to that next phase, which I've always had in mind, but up until now I've just thought, right, we need to just get from 0 to 1 and start selling on Amazon. And now I think now we've got that it's successfully selling, and you know it has been selling at a profitable price. I think ready to start thinking about the next step.
That's really exciting. And is there anything about the next steps that you're happy to share now? And no problem if not, Tom, because I know I'm putting you on the spot. If you're not quite at that stage yet, we don't have to. But are there any sort of thoughts that might be useful for people?
Yeah, so I think so. One of the things I think I've realized through keeping track of the Amazon sales and what's happening in terms of sales going up and down, and you know, there's quite some quite interesting insights in that if you look on a day by day basis, you can actually see that there's a spike about 1-2 p.m. and again about sort of 6 p.m. quite often. And obviously people have gone through dinner time and been like, I can't stand the mess, or I need to do something here, and then they've ordered the mats, which just makes me giggle sort of, because it's an insight into somebody's life. There is an increase in sale, you know, we are creeping up in terms of the number of sales. August will be better than July, but it's quite a slow trajectory. And because I've got 1,000 mats, for better or worse, you know, there is costs to holding those mats, and it's now become clear that if we keep going at this trajectory, then it's going to take quite a while to sell them. So, maybe 9 months, which is fine, but I want to, you know, give it a bit of a rocket boost, really. So my next, I think the product works and the product page is great, but I think what I'd like to do is have a product that's a little bit more, that stands out a little bit more, that's a little bit perhaps less in that language of baby products and perhaps more in the language of interior design, you know, a little bit more, okay, well, I really like that, rather than, okay, that's gonna look fine in my house. And, you know, if you do that, there's obviously some purchases that might be thrown off by that a little bit, you know, because if you do produce a slightly more design-led product, you're naturally going to, there's going to be some people that just don't like it. So the next stage really is to produce another design, or perhaps more than one design. And I think that will be helpful in terms of product sales in a few ways. I think one is, perhaps creating a little bit more of a story around the product. So what I'd like to do is get a mum or a dad who's an artist to have an impact, to sort of come up with the design, very much able to use their personal brand as a way of selling the products. And in that regard, I also like to have it as a slightly more of a premium product. So, you know, you've got our standard mat as it is, and then maybe this product that is, you know, special, maybe sort of a limited edition sort of thing, perhaps could have a higher price point. So the next phase is to slightly broaden the product range. And, you know, if it is a bit of a cooler mat, that's a bit more, perhaps more individual, a bit more design led, you know, perhaps the Instagram marketing would be able to be a bit easier in terms of things that stand out a little bit more on Instagram rather than sort of blend in. So that's really the next step, I think.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm really excited about that, Tom. I think that's all super exciting and completely makes sense. I think also you probably will find that when you launch a new design or more new designs, sales of your existing design will also increase, because then you'll sort of have a more like an entry-level product and then something slightly more premium. But generally, what we find is that as you add new products, people find your new products, but then they find your original products through your new ones, and then sales of those sort of increase in turn as well. So I think that's, I think to me, that sounds like you're definitely on the right track, and that sounds super promising. So very, very exciting. I'm really looking forward to talking with you some more about that.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think probably sorting out the website a little bit so that we can make product purchases through the website, because that will that really helps the profitability.
Yeah, and I think for you having your own sales channel and also being able to sort of get customer data as well would be fantastic, especially if you're starting to launch new designs, you have people to talk about them to. Because one of the downsides with Amazon, as you know, is you just don't get any customer details. So you've got no idea who's buying from you, and you can't then incentivize them to buy from you again or let them know about new products or anything like that. So yeah, I think having some sort of shopping facility on your own website makes total sense.
Yeah,
which gives you more control. So I'm keeping an eye on the time, Tom, because I'm aware I don't want to keep you for too long. I've just got a few more questions, if you're okay for time.
Yes.
So I'd love to know some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome to get to here, and perhaps what you might have learned from them.
I think the biggest challenge was starting from scratch. So, making the decision to move into a world that you really know nothing about. I don't have a history of product manufacturing or selling or anything like that. My day job I'm a chartered surveyor, so I know about buildings and that sort of thing, but really product development and sales is quite far out of my wheelhouse. So I think the biggest challenge for me was not to get too disheartened when you come up against something when it's not really obvious to what you're supposed to do, or obvious at all, or it's almost not possible to know it just on your own, if that makes sense. So things like how certain things with the Amazon portal, which is just not possible to understand how you're doing it without getting external help. I think some of the shipping terms and some of the way that it's dealt with is opaque. And also the order of doing things and the things you should be thinking about is quite challenging. And Vicky, that's where you've been amazing, because there's a few times when I've come up against things, I've just been like, what? Why is this happening? Or why would it be like this? And in almost every circumstance, you know, I've just got an email, like a one-liner from you just to say, oh, don't worry about this, it's this, this, and this. And I think, okay, well, there's no way I'll be able to do that on my own. So I think the biggest challenge is not getting disheartened when you come up against things that are very difficult, but also not being afraid to seek help to overcome those things, which in more often than not are quite simple for someone who knows what they're doing. So that's probably my challenge and my learning. There's lots of people out there who know what they're doing. You're not one of them, you know? So just taking that on board and accepting that you can't do it on your own is a big one.
Thank you for that. And I completely agree that it's a massive, massive learning curve, as with anything. And also we have to kind of acknowledge the fact that while you've been doing this, you do also have a job and a family. I think even if you wanted to, sort of taking it all on probably would have been a bit too much, which leads us to
just one more point on that. There are lots of blogs and posts out there about, oh, how do I, this is, you know, these are the 10 things you need to do to get your product onto Amazon. Jungle Scout have a web series, which I've seen some of the episodes of. And I mentioned the blog earlier on, and you know, obviously it's a few long blog posts about how you might go about putting a product on Amazon. And it's not obvious from the initial read, especially if it's quite a, concise sort of text. It's not obvious when you read it that actually it's not as easy as as reading a blog or writing a blog is loads of more stuff you have to deal with that just come up. And, you know, if in the blog it says, and this, at that point, you just, you order from the factory and then get it shipped over to the UK. Well, that's, you know, it's easy to write it down. It's easy to read it, but actually it's quite a lot more difficult than a lot of people would have you believe.
Absolutely. And I mean, I have listed, I don't know how many lots of products on Amazon. I kind of want to say hundreds. I don't really know if it's that many. It could well be that many.
Yeah.
And even now I come up against things that were unexpected. And you know, you know my attitude, Tom. I believe that you can sort of get around anything and that there's always a way and you just gotta work through it. But things can and do happen that you weren't quite expecting because policies change, or I don't know, you only have to tick the wrong box and things go a bit haywire, and it's not a great system. But you're right, a lot of the sort of the blogs and the tutorials on there don't kind of prepare you for when things don't go according to the plan. When they do, it's great, you know, you can follow a step-by-step process and get your listing set up, but it's when things go wrong that you find that actually that's when things get tricky, because as we both know, the support from Amazon, and I hate to say this, but isn't amazing as a seller. And there's not loads of advice out there on what you do when things don't go as they should. So
yes, exactly.
Yeah,
that would be a good blog, when things go launching your product on Amazon.
I might write that one. Yeah, thanks exactly. for the idea. Perhaps I'll write
there we
that.
Go.
Thanks, Tom. So yes, we sort of touched on this a second ago about, you know, the fact that you also have your young family and you're also working, and your wife also, SJ, is also working alongside this. So how are you managing to balance PAYGO with your day job, with family life, and with everything else that's going on?
Yeah, so I run the valuations part of a surveying company, and I also have a property development company and two kids and my wife. And the other thing is, you know, I've recently moved to the coast. You know, I want to spend time, you know, surfing and swimming and all that sort of stuff. So there's even more stuff to juggle than there was a few months ago. I think the tricky thing is, one of the challenges I think I'm having at the moment is I'm very excited about the future of PAYGO, but it doesn't have a defined income amount next to it, or any sort of salary, or any certainty without me putting in quite a lot of effort. Whereas I have, you know, I've got another job, my job, and there's other things happening in my life which do, and it can be quite difficult to reconcile spending time on PAYGO, or the appropriate time, or the time that I would like, when you know, currently it's a loss-making business. So that's the real challenge. And you know, when other people are sort of shouting at you to deliver work for other things, or to look after kids, or the beach is calling me, I think I can hear it now. It's difficult to say to yourself, oh, well, actually, do you know what? This is going to earn me this amount of time, this amount of money, sorry, in 2 years' time. And therefore I need to put in the hours now. So it can be a bit of a motivational challenge. So how do I balance it? Generally, a few hours a week grabbed here and there, I'd say. But at the moment, probably 3 or 4 hours a week. And then occasionally something big will come up and I have to put in, you know, a little bit more time. But yeah, it's grabbed here and there, around sort of other demands.
Yeah, thank you for that, and for being so honest about it all. And I think for a lot of us, that's where it kind of starts, where it starts off. And I guess it's just worth sort of, you know, knowing that yes, that, and you know, it might take a couple of years to pay off, but it is, you're right, it is a hard juggling act, because obviously if you know, the more time you can put into it, sort of the quicker the payoff will be. But it, yeah, that is a really big challenge. And thank you for sort of acknowledging that.
It's, and it's really quite obvious at the moment, because there's certain things like, you needed to, we talked about developing a new map pattern, sorting out the website, paying a bit more attention to Instagram. Certain things that, you know, I know that if I, you know, took a week off and sorted them all out, then, you know, that would be great, and that would really move us on to the next stage. It's probably more than a week, but I'm also I can't really spare that time, or really want to spare that time necessarily. So it's a question of doing enough to get it to the next level within the time you have. And it's difficult because other stuff is also happening. So I also like, there's also a situation where I'm sure some people get to, where they have there is a point at which they say, you know, I could stop. I could just let's just call a day on it and focus on other things you're doing. I don't really want to do that, but also financially it's probably not going to be a particularly good idea either, because all those sunk costs will obviously not be able to be retrieved, as you said. I guess I'm sort of locked in, but it sounds negative, but actually I like the fact that I'm locked into it, because it is interesting, and it's does make my sort of time a bit more varied. So yeah, as you can tell, like a lot of things in my life, there's a lot of things going on. It's quite a complicated situation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, it's worth remembering as well that I think for lots of people that it is a slow build up. I remember I used to sort of look at companies and think, oh, you know, they're doing really well, and then sort of when you dig into them a bit more, you realize it took them 5 years, 10 years, maybe even longer to get where they are. And I don't know, I'm not, I believe in the overnight success stories anymore. I used to sort of listen to podcasts or read about people and think, oh well, they've come from nowhere. But sort of the further I sort of go along with this, I'm realizing that simply isn't the case. Like, but isn't there a saying like, behind every overnight success there's like 5 years of work or something? I forget the exact quote. I'm probably, you know, terribly misquoting that, but it's something like that. And I think the main thing is you've said is, if you're enjoying it and you're getting something out of it, then it's definitely worth pursuing. I think if it gets to the point for you or for anyone else where it's making you miserable, or it's a massive financial drain or energy drain, then it's worth reevaluating. But I think as long as you're in a situation where you can continue with it in whatever form you can, then it's probably worth pursuing. And I do think you've got, for your business, I think you've got some exciting options ahead of you as well. I think, you know, so starting the way you did makes sense, but I personally think to sort of come out with some bold designs and do something a bit different is really brave. But because it's really brave, it's really exciting. But I'm not sure that perhaps you would have been ready to do that sort of a year, 18 months ago. So
that's exactly right, Vicky. Yeah, I mean, you're taking a huge, taking a risk with your time and your money to start with. The last thing I want to do is to have 1,000 mats that I know, or it becomes obvious quite quickly, that I can't sell because nobody likes them, which is obviously, I don't think that would have happened, but that's a bigger risk than if you come up with a pattern that is, you know, is lovely and, you know, I've had some good feedback from it, but isn't going to set the world on fire. It's purposefully not going to set the world on fire. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't have been able to do that at the beginning, because absolutely not enough confidence. But it's only when you see those figures come in and you talk to people and you get, I think the competition element is really interesting, because Amazon is a bit of a crucible in terms of competition, because people come up with stuff all the time. How do you distinguish yourself from the others who are doing a similar thing to you? But obviously they're coming up with sort of new ideas, new products at the same time. And so I think by a bold pattern with a story behind it that can't actually be replicated by anybody else, because there's only one of the artists that's done it, or the person who's done it, I hope that it will be a way for us to distinguish ourselves and really be able to compete on a slightly different basis, in a way that can't be replicated by other sellers, which is obviously massive on Amazon. So
Yeah, well, I think it's super exciting. Genuinely, I think it's exciting.
Thanks, Vicky. That means a lot. That means a lot.
So just one final question before we finish, Tom, which I ask everybody, which is, what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators? What's the top thing you want people to take away from this?
Yes. The top piece of advice, I think, would be seek help. Get help from other people. It's not possible. How much you think I can do this, and I know what I'm doing, and I'm, you know, positive. Not only will you not be able to do it on your own, but even if you do it on your own, you'll have wasted a huge amount of time learning stuff that you just don't need to know. I mean, it did come across earlier on when we were talking about the advertising, you know, the keywords advertising versus the ASIN. I know what that is, but I'm not an expert in Amazon advertising, which is Vicky why I got you here. And so that would be my number one advice. But the other bit of advice would just be, just start. Like, just do the next, that was from Frozen 2, but just do the next right thing, you know? I've watched that film too many times. But if you just, you're in, you know, you want to do a sell Amazon, you want to do selling on Amazon or another, selling a product like this, e-commerce, you're starting from scratch, do a bit of research, decide on what you're doing, and then start. And, you know, it's probably not going to be a walk in the park. It might not be the right thing. It might not be exactly right. But the amount of experience you'll get just by starting to do something will be invaluable.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you've shared today, Tom.
No problem. It's been a nice chat, actually.
It's been brilliant. Thank you. Mm.
Hi, thank you so much for listening. As always, I would absolutely love to know what you thought of this episode. Please do remember to rate and review the show, and also, most importantly, subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And as a reminder, I release a new episode every single Friday. So take care and look forward to speaking to you again then. Hi, this is just a little note to say, if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.